Chapter 9. Pippi Goes to a Coffee Party. Tommy's and Anika's mother had invited a few ladies to a coffee party, and as she had done plenty of baking, she thought Tommy and Anika might invite Pippi over at the same time. The children would entertain each other and give no trouble to anyone. Tommy and Anika were overjoyed when their mother told them, and immediately dashed over to Pippi's to invite her. Pippi was in the garden, watering the few flowers still in bloom with an old rusty watering can. As it was raining cats and dogs that day, Tommy told Pippi her watering seemed hardly necessary.
"Yes, that's what you say," said Pippi grudgingly. "But I've lain awake all night thinking what fun it was going to be to get up and water, and I'm not going to let a little rain stand in my way."
Now Anika came forth with the delightful news about the coffee party.
"A coffee party? Me?"
cried Pippi, and she was so excited that she began to water Tommy instead of the rose bush she intended to sprinkle.
"Oh, what will happen? Oh, I'm so nervous. What if I can't behave myself?"
"Of course you can," said Anika. "Don't you be too certain about that," said Pippi. "You can be sure I'll try. But I have noticed several times that people don't think I know how to behave, even when I'm trying as hard as ever I can. At sea, we were never so fussy about things like that. But I promise that I'll take special pains today so you won't have to be ashamed of me."
"Good," said Tommy, and he and Anika hurried home again in the rain.
"This afternoon at 3 o'clock, don't forget," cried Anika, peeking out from under the umbrella.
At 3 o'clock, a very stylish young lady walked up the steps of the Settergren's house. It was Pippi Longstocking. For this special occasion, she had unbraided her pigtails, and her red hair hung like a lion's mane around her. With red crayon, she had painted her mouth fiery red, and she had blackened her eyebrows so that she looked almost dangerous. With the crayon, she had also painted her fingernails, and she had put big green rosettes on her shoes. "I should imagine I'll be the most stylish person of all at this party," she said contentedly to herself, as she rang the doorbell. In the Settergren's living room sat three fine ladies, and with them Tommy, Anika, and their mother. A wonderful coffee table had been spread, and in the fireplace a fire was burning brightly. The ladies were talking quietly with one another, and Tommy and Anika were sitting on the sofa looking at an album. Everything was so peaceful. Suddenly, the peace was shattered.
"Attention!"
A piercing cry came from the hall, and the next minute Pippi Longstocking stood in the doorway. She had cried out so loudly and so unexpectedly that the ladies had jumped in their seats.
"Forward march!"
came the next command, and Pippi, with measured steps, walked up to Mrs. Settergren.
"Halt!"
She stopped.
"Arms forward! 1, 2!
She cried, and with both hands gripped one of Mrs. Settergren's and shook it heartily.
"Knees bend!"
she shrieked, and curtsied prettily. Then she smiled at Mrs. Settergren and said in her ordinary voice, "You see, I'm really very shy, so if I didn't give myself some commands, I'd just stand in the hall and not dare to come in." Then she rushed up to the other ladies and kissed them on the cheek.
"Charming, charming, upon my honor," said she,
for she had once heard a stylish gentleman say that to a lady. Then she sat down in the best chair she could find. Mrs. Settergren had intended the children to have their party up in Tommy's and Anika's room, but Pippi stayed calmly in her chair, slapped herself on the knee, and said, looking at the coffee table,
"That certainly looks good. When do we begin?"
At that moment, Ella, the maid, came in with the coffee pot, and Mrs. Settergren said, "Please come and have some coffee."
"First!"
cried Pippi, and was up by the table in 2 skips. She heaped as many cakes as she could onto a plate, threw 5 lumps of sugar into a coffee cup, emptied half the cream pitcher into her cup, and was back in her chair with her lute even before the ladies had reached the table. Pippi stretched her legs out in front of her and placed the plate of cakes between her toes. Then she merrily dunked cakes in her coffee cup, and stuffed so many in her mouth at once that she couldn't have uttered a word no matter how hard she tried. In the twinkling of an eye, she had finished all the cakes on the plate. She got up, struck the plate as if it were a tambourine, and went up to the table to see if there were any cakes left. The ladies looked disapprovingly at her, but that didn't bother her. Chatting gaily, she walked around the table, snatching a cake here and a cake there. "It certainly was nice of you to invite me," she said. "I've never been to a coffee party before." On the table stood a large cream pie, decorated in the center with a piece of red candy. Pippi stood with her hands behind her back and looked at it. Suddenly she bent down and snatched the candy with her teeth. But she dived down a little too hastily, and when she came up again, her whole face was covered with whipped cream. "Goody," laughed Pippi. "Now we can play blind man's buff, for we've certainly got a blind man all made to order. I can't see a thing." She stuck out her tongue and licked away the cream. "This was indeed a dreadful accident," said she. "And the pie is all ruined now anyway, so I may as well eat it all up at once." She dug into it with the pie server, and in a few minutes the whole pie had disappeared. Pippi patted her stomach contentedly. Mrs. Settergren had gone out into the kitchen, so she knew nothing about the accident to the cream pie, but the other ladies looked very sternly at Pippi. No doubt they would have liked a little pie, too. Pippi noticed that they looked disappointed and decided to cheer them up. "Now, you mustn't feel bad about such a little accident," she said comfortingly. "The main thing is that we have our health. And at a coffee party, you should have fun." She then picked up a sugar bowl and tipped all the lump sugar in it out on the floor. "Well, my goodness," she cried. "Now look what I've done. How could I make such a mistake? I thought this was the granulated sugar. Bad luck seems to follow me today." Thereupon, she took a sugar spoon out of another bowl and began to sprinkle granulated sugar all over the floor. "I hope you notice," she said, "that this is the kind of sugar you sprinkle on things, so it's perfectly all right for me to do this, because why should there be the kind of sugar to sprinkle on things if somebody doesn't go and sprinkle it? That's what I'd like to know." "Have you ever noticed what fun it is to walk on a floor that has had sugar sprinkled all over it?" she asked the ladies. "Of course, it's even more fun when you're barefoot," she added as she pulled off her shoes and stockings. "You ought to try it, too. Because nothing's more fun, believe me." At that moment, Mrs. Settergren came in, and when she saw the sugar all over the floor, she took Pippi firmly by the arm and led her over to the sofa to Tommy and Anika. Then she went over to the ladies and invited them to have more coffee. That the cream pie had disappeared only made her happy, because she thought the ladies had liked it so much that they had eaten it all. Pippi, Tommy, and Anika sat talking quietly on the sofa. The fire crackled on the hearth. The ladies drank their coffee, and all was quiet and peaceful again. And as so often happens at coffee parties, the ladies began to talk about their servant problems. Apparently they had not been able to get very good servants, for they were not at all satisfied with them, and they agreed that it really was better not to have any servants at all. It was much more satisfactory to do things yourself, because then you at least knew that things were done right. Pippi sat on the sofa listening, and after the ladies had been talking a while, she said, "Once my grandmother had a servant named Malin. She had chilblains on her feet, but otherwise there was nothing wrong with her. The only annoying thing was that as soon as company came, she would rush at them and bite their legs, and bark. Oh, how she would bark! You could hear it all through the neighborhood. But it was only because she was playful. Only, of course, strangers didn't always understand that. The dean's wife, an elderly woman, came to see Grandmother once soon after Malin first came, and when Malin came dashing at her and bit her in the ankle, the dean's wife screamed so loudly that it scared Malin so that her teeth clamped together, and she couldn't get them apart. There she sat, stuck to the dean's wife's ankle until Friday. And Grandmother had to peel the potatoes herself. But at least it was well done. She peeled so well that when she was done there were no potatoes left, only peelings. But after that Friday, the dean's wife never came to call on Grandmother again. She just never could take a joke. And poor Malin, who was always so good-natured and happy. Though for that matter she was a little touchy at times, there's no denying that. Once when Grandmother poked a fork in her ear, she howled all day. Pippi looked around and smiled pleasantly. "Yes, that was Malin for you," she said, and twiddled her thumbs. The ladies acted as if they had heard nothing. They continued to talk. "If my Rosa were only clean," said Mrs. Bergren, "then maybe I could keep her. But she's a regular pig." "Say, you ought to have seen Malin," Pippi interrupted. "Malin was so outrageously dirty that it was a joy to see her," Grandmother said. "For the longest time, Grandmother thought she had a very dark complexion, but honest and true, it was nothing but dirt that would wash off. And once at a bazaar at the City Hotel, she got first prize for the dirt under her nails. Mercy me, how dirty that girl was," said Pippi happily. Mrs. Settergren looked at her sternly. "Can you imagine?" said Mrs. Granberg. "The other evening when Britta was going out, she borrowed my blue satin dress without even asking for it. Isn't that dreadful?"
"Yes, indeed," said Pippi. "She certainly seems to be cut from the same piece of cloth as Malin, from what you say. Grandmother had a pink undershirt that she was specially fond of, but the worst of it was that Malin liked it too. And every morning, Grandmother and Malin argued about who was to wear the undershirt. At last they decided it would be fair to take turns, and each wear it every other day. But imagine how tricky Malin could be. Sometimes she'd come running in when it wasn't her turn at all, and say, 'No mashed turnip today if I can't wear the pink woolen undershirt.' Well, what was Grandmother to do? Mashed turnip was her very favorite dish. There was nothing to it but to give Malin the shirt. As soon as Malin got the shirt, she went out into the kitchen as nice as could be and began to mash turnip so that it spattered all over the walls." There was silence for a little while, and then Mrs. Alexanderson said, "I'm not absolutely certain, but I strongly suspect that my Hulda steals. In fact, I've noticed that things disappear." "Malin," began Pippi, but Mrs. Settergren interrupted her. "Children," she said decidedly, "go up to the nursery immediately."
"Yes, but I was only going to tell that Malin stole too," said Pippi, "like a raven, everything she could lay her hands on. She used to get up in the middle of the night and steal. Otherwise she couldn't sleep well, she said. Once she stole Grandmother's piano and tucked it into her own top bureau drawer. She was very clever with her hands, Grandmother said."
Tommy and Anika took hold of Pippi and pulled her out of the room and up the stairs. The ladies began on their third cups of coffee, and Mrs. Settergren said, "It's not that I want to complain about my Ella, but she does break the china." A red head appeared over the stair rail.
"Speaking of Malin," said Pippi, "maybe you are wondering if she used to break any china. Well, she did. She set apart one day a week just to break china. It was Tuesday, Grandmother said. As early as 5 o'clock on Tuesday morning, you could hear this jewel of a maid in the kitchen breaking china. She began with the coffee cups and glasses and little things like that, and then went on to the soup bowls and dinner plates, and she finished up with platters and soup tureens. There was such a crash bang in the kitchen all morning that it was a joy to hear it," Grandmother said. "And if Malin had any spare time late in the afternoon, she would go into the drawing room with a little hammer and knock down the antique East Indian plates that were hanging on the walls. Grandmother bought new china every Wednesday," said Pippi, and disappeared up the stairs as quickly as a jack-in-the-box. But now Mrs. Settergren's patience had come to an end. She ran up the stairs, into the nursery, and up to Pippi, who had just begun to teach Tommy to stand on his head. "You must never come here again," said Mrs. Settergren, "when you can't behave any better than this." Pippi looked at her in astonishment, and her eyes slowly filled with tears. "That's just what I was afraid of," she said, "that I couldn't behave properly. It's no use to try. I'll never learn. I should have stayed on the ocean."
She curtsied to Mrs. Settergren, said goodbye to Tommy and Anika, and went slowly down the stairs. The ladies were now getting ready to go home, too. Pippi sat down in the hall near the shelf where rubbers were kept and watched the ladies putting on their hats and coats.
"Too bad you don't like your maids," said she. "You should have had one like Malin. Grandmother always said there was nobody like her. Imagine, one Christmas, when Malin was going to serve a little roast pig, do you know what she did? She had read in the cookbook that roast pig must be served with frilled paper in the ears and an apple in the mouth. But poor Malin didn't understand that it was the pig who was supposed to have the apple. You should have seen her when she came in on Christmas Eve with her best apron on and a big Gravenstein apple in her mouth. "Oh, Malin, you're crazy," Grandmother said to her, and Malin couldn't say a word in her own defense. She could only wiggle her ears until the frilled paper rustled. To be sure, she tried to say something, but it just sounded like "wub, wub, wub." And of course she couldn't bite people in the leg as she usually did, and it would be a day when there was a lot of company. "Poor little Malin. It wasn't a very happy Christmas Eve for her," said Pippi sadly. The ladies were now dressed and said a last goodbye to Mrs. Settergren, and Pippi ran up to her and whispered, "Forgive me because I couldn't behave myself. Goodbye." Then she put on her large hat and followed the ladies. Outside the gate, their ways parted. Pippi went toward Villa Villacoula, and the ladies in the other direction. When they had gone a little way, they heard someone panting behind them. It was Pippi, who had come racing back. You can imagine that Grandmother mourned when she lost Malin. Just think, one Tuesday morning, when Malin had had time to break only about a dozen teacups, she ran away and went to sea. And Grandmother had to break the china herself that day. She wasn't used to it, poor thing, and she got blisters all over her hands. She never saw Malin again, and that was a shame, because she was such an excellent maid, Grandmother said. Pippi left, and the ladies hurried on. But when they had gone a couple of hundred feet, they heard Pippi from far off, yelling at the top of her lungs, "She never swept under the beds!" Chapter 10. Pippi Acts as a Lifesaver. One Sunday afternoon, Pippi sat wondering what to do. Tommy and Anika had gone to a tea party with their mother and father, so she knew she couldn't expect a visit from them. The day had been filled with pleasant tasks. She had got up early and served Mr. Nilsson fruit juice and buns in bed. He looked so cute sitting there in his light blue nightshirt, holding the glass in both hands. Then she had fed and groomed the horse and told him a long story of her adventures at sea. Next, she had gone into the parlor and painted a large picture on the wallpaper. The picture represented a fat lady in a red dress and a black hat. In one hand, she held a yellow flower, and in the other, a dead rat. Pippi thought it a very beautiful picture. It dressed up the whole room. Then she had sat down in front of her chest and looked at all her birds' eggs and shells and thought about the wonderful places where she and her father had collected them and about all the pleasant little shops all over the world where they had bought the beautiful things that were now in the drawers of her chest. Then she had tried to teach Mr. Nilsson to dance the schottische, but he didn't want to learn. For a while she'd thought of trying to teach the horse, but instead she had crept down into the woodbox and pulled the cover down. She had pretended she was a sardine in a sardine box. And it was a shame Tommy and Anika weren't there, so they could have been sardines, too. Now it had begun to grow dark. She pressed her little pug nose against the window pane and looked out into the autumn dusk. She remembered that she hadn't been riding for a couple of days, and decided to go at once. That would be a nice ending to a pleasant Sunday. Accordingly, she put on her big hat, fetched Mr. Nilsson from a corner where he sat playing marbles, saddled the horse, and lifted him down from the porch. And off they went, Mr. Nilsson on Pippi and Pippi on the horse. It was quite cold, and the roads were frozen, so there was a good crunchy sound as they rode along. Mr. Nilsson sat on Pippi's shoulder and tried to catch hold of some of the branches of the trees as they went by, but Pippi rode so fast it was no use. Instead, the branches kept boxing him in the ears, and he had a hard time keeping a straw hat on his head. Pippi rode through the little town, and people pressed anxiously up against the walls when she came storming by. The town had a market square, of course. There were several charming old one-story buildings and a little yellow-painted town hall. And there was also an ugly wretch of a building, newly built and three stories high.
It was called the Skyscraper because it was taller than any of the other houses in town. On a Sunday afternoon, the little town was always quiet and peaceful. But suddenly the quiet was broken by loud cries. "The skyscraper's burning! Fire! Fire!" People came running excitedly from all directions. The fire engine came clanging down the street, and the little children who usually thought fire engines were such fun now cried from fright because they were sure their own houses would catch fire too. The police had to hold back the crowds of people gathering in the square so that the fire engine could get through. The flames came leaping out of the windows of the skyscraper, and smoke and sparks enveloped the firemen who were courageously trying to put out the fire. The fire had started on the first floor, but was quickly spreading to the upper stories. Suddenly, the crowd saw a sight that made them gasp with horror. At the top of the house was a gable, and in the gable window, which a little child's hand had just opened, stood two little boys calling for help. "We can't get out because somebody has built a fire on the stairs," cried the older boy. He was 5, and his brother a year younger. Their mother had gone out on an errand, and there they stood, all alone. Many of the people in the square began to cry, and the fire chief looked worried. There was, of course, a ladder on the fire truck, but it wouldn't reach anywhere near to the little boys. To get into the house to save the children was impossible. A wave of despair swept over the crowd in the square when they realized there was no way to help the children. And the poor little things just stood up there and cried. It wouldn't be long now before the fire reached the attic. In the midst of the crowd in the square sat Pippi on her horse. She looked with great interest at the fire engine and wondered if she should buy one like it. She liked it because it was red, and because it made such a fearful noise as it went through the streets. Then she looked at the fire, and she thought it was fun when a few sparks fell on her. Presently she noticed the little boys up in the attic. To her astonishment, they looked as if they weren't enjoying the fire at all. That was more than she could understand, and at last she had to ask the crowd around her, "Why are the children crying?" First she got only sobs in answer. But finally a stout gentleman said, "Well, what do you think? Don't you suppose you'd cry yourself if you were up there and couldn't get down?"
"I never cry," said Pippi. "But if they want to get down, why doesn't somebody help them?"
"Because it isn't possible, of course," said the stout gentleman. Pippi thought for a while. Then she asked, "Can anybody bring me a long rope?"
"What good would that do?" asked the stout gentleman. "The children are too small to get down the rope. And for that matter, how would you ever get the rope up to them?"
"Oh, I've been around a bit," said Pippi calmly. "I want a rope."
There was not a single person who thought it would do any good. But somehow or other, Pippi got her rope. Not far from the gable of the skyscraper grew a tall tree. The top of it was almost level with the attic window, but between the tree and the window was a distance of almost 3 yards, and the trunk of the tree was smooth and had no branches for climbing on. Even Pippi wouldn't be able to climb it. The fire burned. The children in the window screamed. The people in the square cried. Pippi jumped off the horse and went up to the tree. Then she took the rope and tied it tightly to Mr. Nilsson's tail. "Now you be Pippi's good boy," she said. She put him on the tree trunk and gave him a little push. He understood perfectly what he was supposed to do, and he climbed obediently up the tree trunk. Of course, it was no trouble at all for a little monkey to do that. The people in the square held their breath and watched Mr. Nilsson. Soon he had reached the top of the tree. There he sat on a branch and looked down at Pippi. She beckoned him to come down again. He did so at once, climbing down on the other side of the branch, so that when he reached the ground, the rope was looped over the branch and hung down double, with both ends on the ground. "Good for you, Mr. Nilsson," said Pippi. "You're so smart you can be a professor any time you wish." She untied the knot that had fastened the rope to Mr. Nilsson's tail. Nearby, a house was being repaired, and Pippi ran over and got a long board. She took the board in one hand, ran to the tree, grasped the rope in her free hand, and braced her feet against the trunk of the tree.
Quickly and nimbly she climbed up the trunk, and the people stopped crying in astonishment. When she reached the top of the tree, she placed the board over a stout branch and then carefully pushed it over to the windowsill. And there lay the board, like a bridge between the top of the tree and the window. The people down in the square stood absolutely silent. They were so tense they couldn't say a word. Pippi stepped out on the board. She smiled pleasantly at the two boys in the gabled window.
"Why do you look so sad?" she asked. "Have you got a stomach ache?"
She ran across the board and hopped in at the window.
"My, it seems warm in here," she said. "You don't need to make any more fire in here today, that I can guarantee. And at the most, 4 sticks in the stove tomorrow, I should think."
Then she took one boy under each arm and stepped out on the board again.
"Now you're really going to have some fun," she said. "It's almost like walking the tightrope."
When she got to the middle of the board, she lifted one leg in the air, just as she had done at the circus. The crowd below gasped. And when a little later Pippi lost one of her shoes, several old ladies fainted. However, Pippi reached the tree safely with the little boys. Then the crowd cheered so loudly that the dark night was filled with noise and the sound drowned out the crackling of the fire. Pippi hauled up the rope, fastened one end securely to a branch, and tied the other around one of the boys. Then she let him down slowly and carefully into the arms of his waiting mother, who was beside herself with joy when she had him safe. She held him close and hugged him, with tears in her eyes. But Pippi yelled,
"Untie the rope, for goodness sake! There's another kid up here, and he can't fly either!"
So the people helped to untie the rope and free the little boy. Pippi could tie good knots. She could indeed. She had learned that at sea. She pulled up the rope again, and now it was the second boy's turn to be let down. Pippi was alone in the tree. She sprang out on the board, and all the people looked at her and wondered what she was going to do. She danced back and forth on the narrow board. She raised and lowered her arms gracefully and sang in a hoarse voice that could barely be heard down in the square, "The fire is burning, it's burning so bright. The flames are leaping and prancing. It's burning for you, it's burning for me. It's burning for all who are dancing." As she sang, she danced more and more wildly until many people covered their eyes in horror, for they were sure she would fall down and kill herself. Flames came leaping out of the gable window, and in the firelight people could see Pippi plainly. She raised her arms to the night sky, and while a shower of sparks fell over her, she cried loudly, "Such a jolly, jolly fire!" She took one leap and caught the rope. "Look out!" she cried, and came sliding down the rope like greased lightning. 3 cheers for Pippi Longstocking! Long may she live!" cried the fire chief. "Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!" cried all the people. 3 times. But there was one person there who cheered 4 times. It was Pippi Longstocking. Chapter 11. Pippi Celebrates Her Birthday. One day, Tommy and Anika found a letter in their mailbox. It was addressed to Tommy and Anika, and when they opened it, they found a card which read, "Tommy and Anika are invited to Pippi's tomorrow to her birthday party. Dress. Wear whatever you like." Tommy and Anika were so happy they began to skip and dance. They understood perfectly well what was printed on the card, although the spelling was a little unusual. Pippi had had a great deal of trouble writing it. To be sure, she had not recognized the letter I in school the day she was there, but all the same she could write a little. When she was sailing on the ocean, one of the sailors on her father's ship used to take her up on deck in the evening now and then and try to teach her to write. Unfortunately, Pippi was not a very patient pupil. All of a sudden she would say, "No, Friedolf?" That was his name. "No, Friedolf? Bother all this learning. I can't study any more now.
because I must climb the mast to see what kind of weather we're going to have tomorrow.
So it was no wonder the riding didn't go so well now. One whole night she sat struggling with that invitation, and at dawn, just as the stars were paling in the sky over Villa Villacoula, she tiptoed over to Tommy's and Anika's house and dropped the letter into their mailbox. As soon as Tommy and Anika came home from school, they began to get all dressed up for the party. Anika asked her mother to curl her hair, and her mother did, and tied it with a big pink satin bow. Tommy combed his hair with water so that it would lie all nice and smooth. He certainly didn't want any curls. Then Anika wanted to put on her very best dress, but her mother thought she'd better not, for she was seldom neat and clean when she came home from Pippi's. So Anika had to be satisfied with her next best dress. Tommy didn't care what suit he wore, so long as he looked nice. Of course, they had bought a present for Pippi. They had taken the money out of their own piggy banks, and on the way home from school had run into the toy shop on Main Street and bought a very beautiful... Well, what they had bought was a secret for the time being. There it lay, wrapped in green paper and tied with a great deal of string. And when they were ready, Tommy took the package and off they went, followed by their mother's warning to take good care of their clothes. Anika was to carry the package part of the way, and they were both to hold it when they handed it to Pippi. That they had agreed upon. It was already November, and dusk came early. When Tommy and Anika went in through the gate of Villa Villacoula, they held each other's hands tightly, because it was quite dark in Pippi's garden, and the wind sighed mournfully through the bare old trees. "Seems like fall," said Tommy. It was so much pleasanter to see the lighted windows in Villa Villacoula and to know that they were going to a birthday party. Ordinarily, Tommy and Anika rushed in through the kitchen door, but this time they went to the front door. The horse was not on the porch. Tommy gave a lively knock on the door. From inside came a low voice. "Who comes in the dark night on the road to my house? Is it a ghost or just a poor little mouse?"
"No, no, Pippi, it's us," shrieked Anika. "Open the door."
Pippi opened the door.
"Oh, Pippi, why did you say that about a ghost? I was so scared," said Anika, and completely forgot to congratulate Pippi.
Pippi laughed heartily and opened the door to the kitchen. How good it was to come in where it was light and warm. The birthday party was to be in the kitchen, because that was the pleasantest room in the house. There were only two other rooms on the first floor, the parlor, in which there was only one piece of furniture, and Pippi's bedroom. The kitchen was large and roomy, and Pippi had scrubbed it until it shone. She had put rugs on the floor and a large new cloth on the table. She had embroidered the cloth herself with flowers that certainly looked most remarkable. But Pippi declared that such flowers grew in farthest India, so of course that made them all right. The curtains were drawn, and the fire burned merrily. On the woodbox sat Mr. Nilsson, banging pot lids together. In a corner stood the horse, for he too had been invited to the party. Now at last, Tommy and Anika remembered that they were supposed to congratulate Pippi. Tommy bowed, and Anika curtsied, and then they handed Pippi the green package and said, "May we congratulate you and wish you a happy birthday?" Pippi thanked them and eagerly tore the package open, and there was a music box. Pippi was wild with delight. She patted Tommy, and she patted Anika, and she patted the music box, and she patted the wrapping paper. She wound up the music box, and with much plinking and plunking, out came a melody that was probably supposed to be Octocari Augustine. Pippi wound and wound and seemed to forget everything else. But suddenly she remembered something.
"Oh, my goodness! You must have your birthday presents, too," she said.
"But it isn't our birthday," said Tommy and Anika. Pippi stared at them in amazement.
"No, but it's my birthday, isn't it? And so I can give birthday presents too, can't I? Or does it say in your school books that such a thing can't be done? Is it something to do with that old plutification that makes it impossible?
Oh, of course it's possible, said Tommy. It just isn't customary. But for my part, I'd be very glad to have a present.
Me too, said Anika. Pippi ran into the parlor and brought back two packages from the chest. When Tommy opened his, he found a little ivory flute, and in Anika's package was a lovely brooch shaped like a butterfly. The wings of the butterfly were set with blue and red and green stones. When they had had all their birthday presents, it was time to sit down at the table, where there were all sorts of cakes and buns. The cakes were rather peculiar in shape, but Pippi declared that they were just the kind of cakes they had in China. Pippi served hot chocolate with whipped cream, and the children were just about to begin their feast when Tommy said, "When Mama and Papa have a party, the gentlemen always get cards telling them what ladies to take in to dinner. I should think we ought to have cards, too."
"Okay," said Pippi. "Although it will be kind of hard for us because I'm the only gentleman here," added Tommy doubtfully.
"Fiddlesticks," said Pippi. "Do you think Mr. Nilsson is a lady, maybe?"
"Oh, of course not. I forgot Mr. Nilsson," said Tommy. And he sat down on the woodbox and wrote on a card, "Mr. Settergren will have the pleasure of taking Miss Longstocking in to dinner."
"Mr. Settergren, that's me," said he with satisfaction, and showed Pippi the card. Then he wrote on the next card, "Mr. Nilsson will have the pleasure of taking Miss Settergren in to dinner."
"Okay, but the horse must have a card, too," said Pippi decidedly, "even if he can't sit at the table." So Tommy, at Pippi's dictation, wrote, "The horse will have the pleasure of remaining in the corner where he will be served cakes and sugar." Pippi held the card under the horse's nose and said, "Read this and see what you think of it." As the horse had no objection to make, Tommy offered Pippi his arm, and they walked to the table. Mr. Nilsson showed no intention of offering his arm to Anika, so she took a firm hold of him and lifted him up to the table. But he didn't want to sit on a chair. He insisted on sitting right on the table. Nor did he want any chocolate with whipped cream. But when Pippi poured water in his cup, he took it in both his hands and drank. Anika and Tommy and Pippi ate and ate. And Anika said that if these cakes were the kind they had in China, then she intended to move to China when she grew up. When Mr. Nilsson had emptied his cup, he turned it upside down and put it on his head. When Pippi saw that, she did the same. But as she had not drunk quite all her chocolate, a little stream ran down her forehead and over her nose. She caught it with her tongue and lapped it all up. "Waste not, want not," she said. Tommy and Anika licked their cups clean before they put them on their heads. When everybody had had enough and the horse had had his share, Pippi took hold of all four corners of the tablecloth and lifted it up so that the cups and plates tumbled over each other as if they were in a sack. Then she stuffed the whole bundle in the woodbox. "I always like to tidy up a little as soon as I've eaten," she said. Then it was time for games. Pippi suggested they play a game called Don't Touch the Floor. It was very simple. The only thing one had to do was walk all around the kitchen without once stepping on the floor. Pippi skipped around in the twinkling of an eye, and even for Tommy and Anika it was quite easy. You began on the drain board, and if you stretched your legs enough, it was possible to step onto the back of the stove. From the stove to the wood box, and from the wood box to the hat shelf, and down under the table, and from there across two chairs to the corner cupboard. Between the corner cupboard and the drain board was a distance of several feet, but luckily, there stood the horse, and if you climbed up on him at the tail end and slid off at the head end, making a quick turn at exactly the right moment, you landed exactly on the drain board. When they had played this game for a while, and Anika's dress was no longer her next best dress, but her next, next, next best one, and Tommy had become as black as a chimney sweep, then they decided to think up something else. "Suppose we go up in the attic and visit the ghosts," suggested Pippi. Anika gasped. Are there really ghosts in the attic? She asked.
Are there ghosts? Millions, said Pippi. It's just swarming with all sorts of ghosts and spirits. You trip over them wherever you walk. Shall we go up?
Oh, Pippi, said Anika, and looked reproachfully at her.
Mama says there aren't any such things as ghosts and goblins, said Tommy boldly.
And well she might, said Pippi, because there aren't any anywhere else. All the ghosts in the world live in my attic, and it doesn't pay to try to make them move.
But they aren't dangerous. They just pinch you in the arm so you get black and blue, and they howl, and they play ninepins with their heads.
Do they really play ninepins with their heads?
Sure, that's just what they do, said Pippi. Come on, let's go up and talk with them. I'm good at playing ninepins.
Tommy didn't want to show that he was frightened, and in a way he really did want to see a ghost. That would be something to tell the boys at school. Besides, he consoled himself with the thought that the ghosts probably wouldn't dare to hurt Pippi. He decided to go along. Poor Anika didn't want to go under any circumstances. But then she happened to think that a little tiny ghost might sneak downstairs while she was sitting alone in the kitchen. That decided the matter. Better to be with Pippi and Tommy among thousands of ghosts than alone in the kitchen with even the tiniest little ghost child. Pippi went first. She opened the door to the attic stairs. It was pitch dark there. Tommy took a firm grip on Pippi, and Anika took an even firmer grip on Tommy, and so they went up. The stairs creaked and squeaked with every step. Tommy began to wonder if it wouldn't have been better to stay down in the kitchen, and Anika didn't need to wonder. She was sure of it. At last, they came to the top of the stairs and stood in the attic. It was pitch dark there, too, except where a little moonbeam shone on the floor. There were sighs and mysterious noises in every corner when the wind blew in through the cracks.
"Hi, all you ghosts!" shrieked Pippi. But if there was any ghost there, he certainly didn't answer.
"Well, I might have known," said Pippi. "They've gone to a council meeting of the Ghost and Goblin Society."
Anika sighed with relief and hoped that the meeting would last a long time.
But just then, an awful sound came from one of the corners of the attic. "Woo!" it said. And a moment later, Tommy saw something come rushing toward him in the dimness. He felt it brush his forehead and saw something disappear through a little window that stood open. He shrieked to high heaven, "A ghost! A ghost!" And Anika shrieked with him.
"That poor thing will be late for the meeting," said Pippi. "If it was a ghost, and not an owl."
"For that matter, there aren't any ghosts," she continued after a while. "If anybody insists that there are ghosts, I'll tweak him in the nose."
"Yes, but you said so yourself," said Anika.
"Is that so? Did I?" said Pippi. "Well, then I'll certainly tweak my own nose." And she took a firm grip on her nose and tweaked it. After that, Tommy and Anika felt a little calmer. In fact, they were now so courageous that they ventured to go up to the window and look out over the garden. Big, dark clouds sailed through the sky and did their best to hide the moon, and the wind sighed in the trees. Tommy and Anika turned around, but then, oh, horrors! They saw a white figure coming toward them.
"A ghost!"
shrieked Tommy wildly. Anika was so scared she couldn't even shriek. The ghost came nearer and nearer. Tommy and Anika hugged each other and shut their eyes. But then they heard the ghost say,
"Look what I found. Papa's nightshirt in an old sea chest over here. If I hem it up around the bottom, I can wear it."
Pippi came up to them, with the nightshirt dangling around her legs.
"Oh, Pippi, I could have died of fright," said Anika.
"But nightshirts aren't dangerous," Pippi assured her. "They don't bite anybody except in self-defense."
Pippi now decided to examine the sea chest thoroughly. She lifted it up and carried it over to the window and opened the cover so that what little moonlight there was fell on the contents of the chest. There were a great many old clothes, which she threw out on the attic floor. There were a telescope, a few books, 3 pistols, a sword, and a bag of gold pieces. "Tiddly palm and piddly day," said Pippi contentedly.
"It's so exciting," said Tommy.
Pippi gathered everything in the nightshirt, and down they went into the kitchen again. Anika was perfectly satisfied to leave the attic. "Never let children handle firearms," said Pippi, and took a pistol in each hand and prepared to fire. "Otherwise, some accident can easily happen," she said, shooting off both pistols at once. "That was a good bang," she announced, and looked up in the ceiling. The bullets had made 2 holes. "Who knows?" she said hopefully. "Perhaps the bullets have gone right through the ceiling and hit some ghosts in the legs. That will teach them to think twice before they set out to scare any innocent little children again. Because even if there aren't any ghosts, they don't need to go round scaring folks out of their wits, I should think." "Would you each like a pistol?" she asked. Tommy was enchanted, and Anika also very much wanted a pistol, provided it wasn't loaded. "Now we can organize a robber band if we want to," said Pippi. She held the telescope up to her eyes. "With this I can almost see the fleas in South America, I think," she continued. "And it'll be good to have if we do organize a robber band." Just then, there was a knock at the door. It was Tommy's and Anika's father, who had come to take them home. "It was long past their bedtime," he said. Tommy and Anika hurried to say thank you, bid Pippi goodbye, and collect all their belongings, the flute, the brooch, and the pistols. Pippi followed her guests out to the porch and watched them disappear through the garden. They turned around to wave. The light from inside shone on her. There she stood, with her stiff red braids, dressed in her father's nightshirt, which billowed around her feet. In one hand she held a pistol, and in the other the sword. She saluted with it. When Tommy and Anika and their father reached the gate, they heard her calling. They stopped to listen. The wind whistled through the trees, so they could just barely hear what she said.
"I'm going to be a pirate when I grow up,"
she cried.
"Are you?"
And that ends the story of Pippi Longstocking.
We hope you have enjoyed this listening library production of Pippi Longstocking by Astrid Lindgren. Text copyright 1945 by Astrid Lindgren. 1950 by the Viking Press. Renewed 1978 by the Viking Press. Production copyright 1978, Listening Library. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment, it's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to help ensure a lifelong love of literature for the children you care about. Check your local retailer for the wide selection of audiobooks available from Listening Library. Or if you would like to visit us online for more information, check our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you, and happy listening.